Hello, welcome to another episode of the Tombstone Podcast, a podcast where we talk about video games, the video game industry, and whatever we want. I am Devin.
I am Kevin.
My name is Dominic.
And I'm Zach.
And we have another beautiful episode for y'all, but first, we are going to go round robin. What have you been playing? What are you excited about? Kevin.
Well, I finally got to get back to Jedi Fallen Order, and as you know, I beat it yesterday, and it was a fun game. I really enjoyed it. But like I said, and Devin commented on it yesterday, it was just kind of ends. Like, you go through all this stuff, and it builds and builds and builds, and then it just kind of ends. So, you know, the ending wasn't strong, though I can't imagine it ending another way, if that makes sense. But it was very fun, and I got this immediate feeling of, I want to go back and play it already. And I know that's a good mark of me enjoying a game, is I immediately want to go back and play it again.
That sounds awesome. All right, Dominic, what you got for us?
Yeah, I started playing Fallen Order as well, because I think last time I talked about playing it, I didn't even get through the tutorial area, but I'm finally done with that. And I'm on maybe like the second planet or something like that. But that, and definitely a lot of Apex and League of Legends, has been my little casual trip while we're blazing on through the holidays.
Cool, cool. Zach, you've still been playing Destiny 2. That's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, but I also tried out the new Black Desert Mobile. It's
Yeah, how is it?
It's like the actual like Black Desert MMO, but scaled down to fit on mobile, which makes sense. But there's a lot of things that you would do in like the actual like normal MMO that they turned into more AFK things. So it's basically like you click one button, it does everything for you. You maybe click a few of your attacks, and then you just click another button and wait. So I'm probably not going to keep playing it, but
it sounds like all the worst things from the original that I don't like.
Yeah. On the bright side.
And then just scaled up more.
They give you all kinds of free stuff every day because they're like, oh, we now have this many active players, or we reached this milestone. So I've just been getting like all kinds of really difficult to obtain materials and stuff, which I guess is nice, but
we're hitting a singularity between MMOs and idle games now.
Yes. There you go.
Oh my god.
There you go.
I mean, well,
my dream game.
Well, yeah. I mean, like the Blizzard, what was it? Like the WoW Companion or whatever it was. It's not, it's more of the idle version where you're doing like what is it, like the Battleground little side quest.
Neverwinter had the same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Neverwinter had their companion app where you could send your followers to go do
like crafting these, and gathering. Yeah,
yeah, crafting and like dungeons and stuff like that. Which, and they'd get materials for you.
I love that. I mean, if I could just like do that generically and not really have to get back on and do like a WoW or like an MMO experience, unless if I like really jump into it, but like,
I mean, if WoW I just, had that.
Well, yeah, no, and it was good, but me just not being very into WoW right now, if I could just have the companion, that would be pretty.
Me not being into Blizzard because
oof.
Of reasons.
Because of next episode's content.
Yeah. I was at the arcade last night and played Galaga a shit ton last night and got the top score on that machine, and it's not a really good score anyways. Not a lot of people are playing it, I guess. I've almost filled up the leaderboard with just my score.
That was like when we were in North Carolina and we played that track and field game, and I got like 5 out of the top 10 spots.
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's basically what I was doing.
Yeah, and I know, did you laser tag as well? Yeah, because I remember you sent
laser tag and you
sent us a picture, and you were like, you like, what was it? You were like up in like 28,000 roughly, and then like the next up was like 16,000. Like, you were like dwarfing people.
Yeah, I mean, I was mainly just following little kids.
Oh, wow. Just
killing. No.
The best strategy.
I mean, that's the right strategy to do, is you gotta follow the kids and just kill them, because
Kill the kids.
Kids are dumb.
You heard it here first.
Kids are fucking stupid. Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks. Kill the kids.
Yeah,
it's the best strategy. It's how you survive.
Yep. And I've also just been playing a bunch of Halo still. I get on and play a few games of SWAT and then go and do other stuff afterwards. But I've been playing Halo like every day. Just get on and play like a game or two at least of SWAT. And then just, you know, whatever I want to do after that, maybe just I beat Outer Worlds. That was a fun game.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the same, because that's what I was talking about with Jedi Fallen Order, is that I haven't played it yet. I believe it was John Mark that told you that. And with Outer Worlds, it was like the same thing where you're just kind of playing and then you're like, oh shit, I'm at the end of the game. And it's probably like a 15 to 20 hour experience in total. And it's not a very long game. And most of that time that I've had was me fucking around and making sure to go and do all these other quests. But I'm going to have a good write-up for it, and we'll have a good future episode on Outer Worlds.
Nice.
Today we are going to talk about Last of Us, a game that I haven't played. Dominic's watched it. Zach's played a little bit of it. But Kevin has some really solid opinions on it. He knows what he wants to... You know what you want to say about this game, right?
Yes.
Okay, because you're going to take this away for us today. So you go ahead, take the reins. Give us the spiel.
All right. So, Last of Us, I've kind of shit on it vaguely in the past, and I'm kind of coming around and, you know, I'm coming at this as balanced as I can, and so I did my due diligence, I borrowed the game from my brother, I played it, and before I would have said it's a below average game that everyone praises so much that no one really criticizes it. Now I would kind of redact that to say, you know, it's an above average game. It's technically very impressive, but it's still not criticized quite enough. And so that's kind of the approach, is I'm gonna point out what it did right, but I'm also gonna point out what it did wrong. And that's kind of the whole failing I see. I'm not angry anymore. I was initially coming at this from a place of anger, and after playing the game, I'm coming at this from a place of love. I have actually a very deep appreciation for how much work went into this game, and you know, there are some places I want to see it improve, and if it does in the next one coming, excellent, you know. So that's the angle we're going to take with this. So, as the only one who's played the game from beginning to end, I'm the foremost expert on what happens, and so I guess I'll start with the story. To give spoiler heavy, there's no way to avoid it, so if you don't want the game ruined, just go play it. It's not that long.
And then back and listen.
Just come back and listen after you've played the game. Like I said, not that long. So
yeah, don't just fuck off, like come back.
Please come back. But so the story is, to kind of quickly sum it up, it's basically a zombie outbreak. These zombies are, you know, kind of from a fungal sort of infection rather than the typical virus thing. And there's an outbreak and things go nuts, and then, you know, you play as Joel, who's the kind of older looking guy on the cover, and you are along with Ellie, the young girl on the cover, and you're on a quest to bring her cross country because she is immune to the virus. She is, well, to the fungal plague. She's immune to it, and they want to take her and kind of synthesize a vaccine or a cure from her. So it, you know, that's more or less it. There's these people called the Fireflies. They're somewhere, and you're basically looking for them, going further and further, trying to find them. And that's the basic story.
Kind of like your it's your basic Outbreak story, really, because yes. I remember Walking Dead was the show, at least at the end of season one or two, that was a big part, was, oh, hey, there might be a cure for this. And they're like, oh, shit, no, there's not. It's just like a really common outbreak
trope
storyline where there's nothing that's really too... The only interesting part about these kinds of stories are in how the disease affects you, because you had I Am Legend. You have 28 weeks later, 28 days later, whichever one. I think it's 28 days later.
Both.
You have, the first one. The first what I'm one talking mainly. About. Yeah, 28 days later, you have Resident Evil. You have this game. They're all going to be about the same story as far as, oh, shit, all of a sudden there's a big outbreak and... You know, we're in the city and people are dying by the hundreds and the government's like, no, we're just going to, stay there. We're going to kill you if you try to get out, yada, yada, yada. But somehow there's people that are immune to it. Oh, well, shit, now let's make an immunization for it. It's really the same story between all of these different IPs. The only thing that's different is how it affects you. And for this game, it has a pretty unique
it's unique in that it's fungus and there are some unique effects physiologically to victims of the infection.
Yeah, and I'll just say real quick, I think it's more so the premises are the same, but you do definitely see the difference in these different stories as they progress, and it is definitely how the virus or the infection or the raising of the undead affects the people, for sure. But it's also what happens to new on a nuanced level, like what happens with the people. And because that's the thing with Walking Dead, people were like, oh, well, it's not about the zombies, it's the people. And that's where it becomes sort of like a psych horror, but with like zombies in the background.
Yeah.
Whereas something like Resident Evil, it's like the whole driving force is the zombies. And it's about how you deal with the zombies as opposed to how you deal with people who are still alive.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the way that Last of Us tackled what happens, and I'll let you get back into it and get into it, but it really also points to an ethical dilemma that I'd love to talk about as well, which I'm sure you'll introduce with us.
Yes. So there's a few things about what y'all said. I always viewed zombies as a, you know, sort of a mechanical tool, is a tool that you can use in a narrative. But as a narrative itself, it's not very interesting. So if you stick too closely toward that narrative, it's kind of a problem. Walking Dead kind of subverts that by, like you said, making it more about the people, and the zombies are a backdrop to put them in that situation. Because that's why society fell down. But it's really more about the people. And in Resident Evil, that's a video game. It's focusing on it mechanically. So, you know, it's a enemy bioweapon that they drop in a city and it just makes all hell break loose. That's different in its own way and more video gamey. Where Last of Us Falls is kind of more toward that focusing on the people thing, but the narrative arc in terms of where they're going and what they're doing is very much focused on the zombies. So it's kind of in the middle there. I do think that its approach to, you know, focusing on the main characters as the kind of focal point of the narrative is a good approach that they had. But also, like Devin said, it's kind of, this is like every other outbreak story. And that's kind of where I came to the conclusion of the story is a bunch of well-executed cliches.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to kind of cap it off, like really quick, there's this 10-minute opening, which, you know, spoilers again. The opening is about 10 minutes long. It opens with, you know, Joel and his daughter, who's not Ellie, and they're hanging out, normal shit. They're characterizing each other, and then boom, zombie outbreak. They run, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, in getting away from the zombies, they actually, you know, get shot at by the military, and the daughter dies. So opening in the outbreak is very typical. Family member dying, you know, whatever, she was disposable. You know, I don't like that approach to storytelling. You know, like I said before, we have an immune person, the quest is to find a cure. And it's at this point that they established, this is in the first half hour, they established that there's an immune person. I was thinking to myself, I know exactly everything this story is going to do. You're going to bring her there. The cure is somehow, finding the cure in her is somehow going to kill her. And the way they set up the beginning with the daughter dying and now he's working with Ellie, he's not going to let her die. I know that that's the ending. Even like 30 minutes in, I know that's how it's going to end. And that's exactly how it ended. And, you know, you have a bunch of other cliches, like you've got the noble sacrifice where someone's bit, but it's like, oh, I'll buy you time. You've got military assholes. You've got someone who has to take out someone they care about and then guilt-driven to take themselves out. And they've got rapist cannibals, because of course they do, you know, like...
Oh, sure.
Almost every major beat, every major plot twist was something I saw from miles and miles away. So it's so cliched in those ways, but the technical expertise that went into this game sells it better than any other thing that it's ripping from. So it's very, very well executed cliches. Now, I kind of shit on the story there. There are two things I would like to point out as being pretty good. One of my major complaints in my first playthrough of the game and why I stopped, there is a lot of senseless killing, and it just felt like it juxtaposed the point in a way. They do eventually start commenting on the fact that you're killing a lot of people and that they had their own reasons for fighting you. They were doing that to survive. They had their own reasons for doing the horrible things they did is so they don't die. They comment on you killing people who are just trying to survive, just like you. But in the same way, you can almost kind of justify your own killing in that way. So it's like everybody's just looking out for number one. And they comment on that. And they tell you that you're wrong for killing so many people. So I like that they took the time to do that. And they do it somewhat subtly. But as we find in some places in the narrative, some of the morals get a little ham-fisted. There'll be, you get this tone of, you know, nature taking back the world, and you see all these animals freely running around and all this stuff, and then you kind of get that sense, and then they kind of shove it in your face with this scene where there's just like a giraffe, and it's like up in the window, and you can pet it, and it's like, all right, that's pretty ham-fisted. And there's a lot of times where they will specifically call something out as like, oh, well, you think you're so high and mighty, blah, blah, blah. It can be a little ham-fisted at times. They build up to it very well, but then they have that moment where, just in case you didn't tell, just in case you couldn't catch on the moral of the story, here it is in plain text. So, you know, they do both of those. The final major thing about the story that I want to say they did a great job with was, you know, like I said, the ending was super, super cliched. The ending was super cliched, but their execution of the ending was interesting. And basically, like I said before, you know, Ellie's immune. To get the cure, she has to die because it's something in her brain, and they have to basically tear her brain apart to get to it, essentially, is the explanation. So Joel immediately is like, fuck that. I'm not letting you kill her, because he's still dependent on her because he still misses his daughter. So it doesn't paint him as a good guy in doing this, though. Not really. It paints it as not even really justifiable, but logical that he would do that. It makes sense that his character would do that. But he's also still an asshole for doing it. There are several points in saving Ellie where you're killing people who are just trying to save humanity, and you're saying, no, fuck you, I want to save this one person in particular. And there's a scene where the doctors are like, please don't do that, and you just fucking execute them. And it does a really good job of making that moral ambiguity. And, you know, right at the end there, Joel takes her out and she wakes up because she was about to be, you know, she was sedated for procedure. She wakes up in the car while they're driving away and he just straight up lies to her. He says, oh yeah, it turns out there's a bunch of immune people. They, you know, it's not that big a deal. They don't really need you. They've got several other immune people. So we're just free to go. And so Ellie has no idea. And she's immediately guilty that she's alive while so many other people have died to get her there. And she wanted to be the martyr that would bring about the cure. And so there's a lot of, you know, kind of twists and turns morally right at the end. And I would say that the ending is the only part that I was really deeply engaged with the whole story. Everywhere else, I was like, all right, whatever. But that was the one point where they really sold me on the narrative.
Sure. Well, because at that point, that brings about, it's two ethical dilemmas that are discussed a lot in like different branches of philosophy and psychology. One of them, I'm certain we've talked about it in the episode, like the trolley car dilemma, where it's like you have a trolley car is going along a rail, and it's like there's one person on one track and five people on the other track, and it's like, and you are the one holding the lever, and it's like, well, do you kill the one to save the five, or do you kill the five to save the one? And then it adds on different conditions, you know, and it's the way that we add conditions to that dilemma that changes the answer. And then the other, which ties into the other dilemma of, I can't remember specifically what it's called, but it is a scenario in which there's, say, like, hypothetically, there's like 100 like ponds in a row, like down this road, and there is like a kid drowning in every one of these, what is it? And every one of these ponds. And it's like, okay, without any conditions, your intrinsic moral obligation is to go and start at number one and then number two and then number three. But the condition is, well, it's like, well, what if kid number 94 is like your nephew? Or like your cousin, or your son, or your brother, and it's that condition that completely and dynamically changes the dilemma, and that's what's happening here. It's, you know, Joel has the dilemma of whether he saves Ellie, or if he saves potentially the rest of living society, and his condition is that he's sort of latched on to Ellie psychologically as like a father-daughter figure. And that's where that condition changes the outcome of the dilemma. And that's where we see that like Joel is only acting on his independent conditions. And we see that as, or many critics see that as like him being the villain or the bad guy because he's willing to trade society for saving one individual. And that is just like an ongoing psychological debate that I wanted to mention and make that comparison, because it's true. It is like the whole ending is that dilemma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I said, that was the only place where I was engaged with the narrative. Everything else was kind of ticking the check boxes, and suddenly I have this moral dilemma, and it conveyed it very even-handedly. It did. The feeling I got was not Joel is a bad guy or the doctors are bad guys. It's everyone is flawed. Sure. All of these doctors are willing to kill a young girl to save humanity, which is justifiable. And Joel is sort of justifiable in that he doesn't think, you know, Avenger style, we shouldn't trade lives, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's kind of even-handed in that conveyance, and I thought that that ambiguity, and the fact that it ends with that lie of no, that, you know, they've got it, and you know you don't need to sacrifice yourself, and blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. And there's even a point where Ellie says, I've lived and all these other people died to get me there so that I could produce a cure. I need you to tell me to my face and guarantee me that you are not lying about what you said there. And he's just, yeah, that's, I am telling the complete truth. Mm-hmm. So there's just all this ambiguity and it's pretty even-handed. And that is the best part of the story by a very far margin. It's just too bad it takes many hours to get there, you know, much longer than a standard movie. If it was a movie, 2.5 hours long tops, really, if you just condensed all the cutscenes, it'd probably be like 1.5 to 2 hours. If it was just a movie, I would have gotten there fast enough and I would have said, that's a good payoff.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is I played that game for like 12 hours or something, 12 to 16 hours, somewhere in that ballpark. So it just, there's so much of that narrative that would just would kind of fill the air. So I don't know. I'm mixed on the story, but to go over kind of the very technical stuff, there's the visuals. The visuals pushed the boundaries of both the PS3 and PS4 because the PS4 had the remaster on it, which is the one I played. Both pushed the boundaries of what that console was capable of with excellent animations, which were, you know, mo-capped and acted out in real life with a set and everything.
Actors, yeah.
And they did wonderful. The actor director and all of the actors, they did a great job. The actors actually contributed a lot to the overall feel of individual characters. They basically had this philosophy of no one knows the character better than you. So if you have a suggestion, tell me. And they'll do that. They'll work with you as an actor and say, okay, that makes sense. You know, do it like this. And so that environment was very, very good. So excellent animations, excellent performances, both voice, motion, everything. Just all of that looks great. And to kind of cap off the visuals, you know, the environments are very well thought out in terms of detail. Like, I watched the documentary and they said trees naturally emit heat from their base. So in these snowy environments, there's actually spots where the snow is melted near the base of the tree, and that's because of that. You know, they took that level of detail, and it really shows. And they also just really made real life look really good. There's a lot of places where naturally a lot of vegetation is growing up the walls and taking back society and everything. So there's a lot of vegetation popping up through things and everything. This green vegetation is contrasting very well with red brick buildings. You know, there's this nice cohesion. It all feels good and real and pretty. So, you know, hats off, visually fantastic. Moving to the music was actually done in this style where it's very, very minimal. I'm gonna butcher this man's name because he's from Argentina, but his name is Gustavo Santaolalla. I really butchered that last name, but you could just look it up. You can look up the composer. He's really, really good. And he has this sort of philosophy of, one, he uses obscure things. If you're a music dork, definitely look into his work as a whole and his work on this game, because he just started pulling out like PVC pipes and playing them like a didgeridoo and like smacking this metal box with strings on it. And it, like, he did all this weird stuff, and he had this philosophy of basically it's almost the inverse of Fumito Ueda's design by subtraction, in that, you know, design by subtraction is look at what you have and take out things that don't contribute to the art as a whole. He views it as default quiet, because he's working on music. He looks at the scene as default no music. Where should I put it? I'm not going to put it anywhere if it doesn't help the piece. If it does, this is where I'm going to put it. This is how I'm going to do it. The music is very sparse, but very, very powerful when it comes through. So hats off to that. Hats off to the sound design team, because they did a great job with the Foley and characters and, you know, stepping and sounds, and they did a fantastic job with that. There's actually a video I watched on the sound design to get more detail on this. It was The Sound of The Last of Us by Chase Face on YouTube. You could check that out. And finally, just to quickly highlight the performance, this thing has no frame dips at all. Just very solid game, plays really well, solid 30 FPS, which you can't really expect anymore out of a standard console. So they had this little tool. I think everyone should get this damn tool, or make their own rather, because they made it. It's this tool that they had where real time, it could show you what was taking all the processing time and why did it skip frames. So they would have that, and it'd be like, oh, this is the GPU, or this is the PPU, or this is the CPU, or this is the RAM, or this is the this, or this process, or that process. And you're able to see what's taking all this time right here. And then you can drill down into it and say, hey, you know, what caused this to take so long? You need that kind of, you know, that I guess that kind of time in the oven to really bake the performance into a solid single piece, you know. This tool, like, the fact that they made it so consistently 30 FPS, I saw not a single frame drop or anything. That is awesome. That is great. I highly recommend taking that approach if you have the means.
One thing I want to give a hats off to is these ads, because the ad reel that's coming up is it's good. So we should probably take a small break for ads. I'm trying to pick up on Devin's wizardry of finding out good segues.
You started out strong.
Yeah. My only thing in my head was just like, say something about hats off, and then like that's it. But yeah, cool. So we'll break for ads, and then we'll come back and talk more about The Last of Us.
Absolutely.
Welcome back from that ad break. Kevin's going to continue us along his journey that he's prepared for us.
All right. Well, before I do that, D mentioned something he wanted to bring up. So
yeah. So I'll take the ball. So my main thing that I wanted to just sort of address, I think we've discussed it analytically just about every time we bring up a Sony exclusive, but I think it's almost like the Sony trademark to do a cinematic experience, not first, but like primarily, and it's really, really present all over the place. I mean, it's essentially what it is to me. It's a simplistic style of gameplay that is just sort of the bedrock, and then everything else is pure like cinematic experiences. I watched, it was like a no commentary full playthrough of The Last of Us. Like, that was my experience. So to me, it was like truly watching a movie with like some individual conditions because of like whether or not the dude like killed a zombie or not, you know. It's just it was what it was. But I mean, okay, we talked about God of War, and I think I made this little note, I think probably during the Thanksgiving episode. It was just like story over gameplay, and then right underneath it was a bullet point that said Last of Us, and I think that was something that we made like weeks ago. But I mean, so you have God of War, which is like hack and slash combo, Devil May Cry style, pretty basic gameplay, but underneath this like extremely rich story that really took an amazing turn on the Norse mythology and stuff like that. You have Shadow of the Colossus, right? You run, you jump, you grab, you hit, and you shoot, and then you ride a horse, and that's the gameplay. Everything else is the rich atmosphere and the storytelling that doesn't tell you the story. It's the story show, I guess. You have Until Dawn, Detroit Become Human, which is literally just a narrative Telltale style gameplay where you press buttons, and everything else is story based. Horizon Zero Dawn. It's like an I think of it just sort of like the same upgrade path style RPG where you have like, I don't know, kind of like how Assassin's Creed Odyssey took it, but then you have the whole apocalyptic scenario of Horizon, and then now you have it's a little out of order, but then you have, you know, The Last of Us, which is a particularly just regular survival crafting RPG with a couple different elements to it, of course, but it's that is underlying this relatively new take, because not a whole lot of people did the whole fungal infection of style of the zombie apocalypse. Like everything is either a virus or like the more spooky, like actual undead, like people die and then they come back, like reanimation, with like ethical dilemmas and with like these nuances of like father-daughter figures after like, and like in the process of grieving and stuff. It's just it's a connection that I wanted to make, that it's like throughout all of these Sony games you have, and now even with Death Stranding too, people think it's like a walking simulator that plays like a movie, and it's like that's not all the way true, and that's not all the way false either. You know, it is a truly cinematic experience first, in my opinion, and then it's whatever the gameplay is that enriches that story.
Yeah, so that's definitely something I wanted to comment on, and so I guess I'll comment on it here. These Sony exclusives that you're pointing out, they're, you know, they go everywhere, like you said, everywhere from your Telltale style with Detroit Become Human.
Mm-hmm.
Go all the way down to, I would say the most opposed in your examples that you gave is probably Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah.
Because there is a solid gameplay loop that seems like it was intentionally made, and then they made a story in that world, right? So
mm-hmm.
there's a huge gradient there. And Last of Us is somewhere in the middle. I think that these games are trying to be blockbusters, like you're saying. They're made to be a cinematic experience. They're made to be something that everyone's going to want to play because it's, you know, this big event when it comes out, right? Like an Avengers movie or something. It comes out, everyone wants to see it, right? Everyone Sure. wants to play this game. So that is something that I've seen in those Sony exclusive games, with the exception of the Shadow of the Colossus there. I would disagree with you there. But that is a Sony exclusive though. But anyway.
I think my main clarification was that the gameplay, I mean, sure, the gameplay drives the story, but the focus on, so I guess would say maybe Shadow of the Colossus, I think the focus is more on the atmospheric and semi-cinematic experience rather than the gameplay. That was just my take.
Yeah, and I could say that it serves the atmosphere first and foremost, and not a typical narrative like the other games, and that's the distinction I'm trying to make, and that's all. But, so with watching the documentary, I saw that they were talking about their process, and they were saying how there's a whole 6 months or even a year that you don't know anything about the game. When you're starting a new IP, you're building it from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And they literally had someone come up to them and say, "We want you to make a game. It's going to be post-apocalyptic. Have fun."
Yeah.
And so they had no idea what this game was going to be. And so they just started going and making and doing and blah, 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 blah. As they're working on the engine, getting that set up, they're making art. They're making art, they're trying to write a story, because they're not doing anything technical. They're trying to be creative and create the art of what it's going to be. By the time gameplay is getting made, there's already somewhat of a story there, somewhat of a world there. And so it's not game first. They're not considering it game first. Classic example of the opposite is like Super Mario 64. They made an engine, they had you run around this 3D environment and said, "This is fun, let's make a game."
Mm-hmm.
Many other games do this. Pretty famously, Platinum games do this a lot. They will come up with the core mechanic, play it in this rough prototype state and say, "This is fun, now we make a game around it," right? These games here take kind of the opposite approach, where we're going to work on everything at the same time, which usually means gameplay jumps in after the fact. And now we have to kind of reconcile what we did artistically with the game piece. And in the documentary, they actually expressed some amount of ideas that made it evident that they're aware of similar things that I am. They were kind of criticizing themselves. They were saying, you know, you don't know how much just you have to make it come together in the last few weeks. And they said the last 5 weeks, they were just smashing stuff together, trying to get it to work. And there was even one moment where a guy says, oh, we were fighting this dude, and then this dude jumps on my back, and then I throw him off, and then I punch him, and then I shoot this other dude. And he was like, that was a crazy 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. How do we make the whole game that engaging? And that's kind of evident of the problems I'm going to get into.
Yeah.
But, like, they just kind of went world and story first and then put a game in it, which I always argue for the opposite. And so, to get into the criticism, it's pretty much everything to do with the game itself as a game. And, you know, before I even get too far into it, the number one thing a detractor of this game will say is the AI sucks. I feel like that's kind of low-hanging fruit. I do agree, but it's low-hanging fruit. The AI is kind of dumb. Like, there are so many times where you'll be sneaking and there'll be these zombies walking around. And there's a type of zombie called a clicker, which introduces a whole plot hole in and of itself, in that they say, oh, they can't see, so they click for echolocation, but they can't see you. They can only hear you, so they're not really using echolocation. Anyway, you can be sneaking past them, and Ellie or whoever else is with you will literally run and like drop shoulder and push the zombie, and the zombie will stumble and go, ugh. And then just start walking again. And I'm like, oh my fucking God. And there have been several times where there will be human enemies that are just walking around. They can plainly see. I'll be in one area and Ellie will be in another area. And the person will walk into the room. Ellie will run across the room right in front of him and hide right next to me. Guy doesn't see it. Guy doesn't. It just makes it feel like my companions don't exist, which is really bad because the game is about a bond between me as Joel and Ellie, you know? And it's kind of a shitty thing. And perhaps they'll fix it in the next one. But that kind of just breaks your immersion. But I would consider that kind of a shallow criticism there. The next thing I would like to bring up is Ellie, as your major companion, most of the time isn't very important to your gameplay. Like I said, her AI is not great. She doesn't contribute much to the, you know, to a fight. And at first, that's for a reason. You're kind of resisting giving her a gun, so that has a narrative purpose. But there's a point where you give her a gun, and she's still not that useful. She's not useful in sneaking. She's not. She doesn't listen to you in terms of command. Like, there's not a whole lot of interaction between you and Ellie. And there are some puzzle components, I suppose, quote, heavy air quotes, puzzles that involve Ellie. And that's when the puzzles are at their best. The puzzles are at their best when it's an interaction because it kind of brings you closer to Ellie. But there's not nearly enough of that. And to harp on the puzzles some more, they're not engaging mentally. They just kind of fill dead air. It's a philosophy of find the puzzle piece and where you put it is evident, rather than I have a puzzle piece, where do I put this? You know, there's a difference in thought there, and they're very, very repetitive. There's this thing where Ellie can't swim in the game, so your whole thing is you as Joel jump in the water, you find a pallet. You swim it over to her, she jumps on, you bring her across the gap, and she does something for you, and then you can cross up and meet her. That is a very repeated thing, to the point that the game is like, where you swim up with the pallet, and you're like, hey, Ellie, and she's like, yeah, yeah, I fucking get it. Get on the fucking pallet. And I'm like,
how self-aware.
You are aware.
I remember that God of War did the same thing with the boat.
I was gonna say
where there's one time where Atreus is like, yeah, I know, get in the boat. I'm doing that. It's just like I kind of like it because it's kind of like a. I mean, it's like here we have this thing that like, it's in the game. And it's kind of a puzzle element, problem solving element. And we understand it can get repetitive, and you have these two characters that are interacting with each other all the time. You'd imagine that one of them would eventually bring up, it's like, all right, yeah, let's do this again. It's like,
I like that in terms of narrative, mm-hmm. but the fact that they're aware that it's so repetitive, that's the problem.
I think it's a difference between just sort of acknowledging that it is like another step that they have to take versus like a more exhausting repetition. Because I agree that narratively, it's like the characters are understanding of the input that is being made. You know, like mm-hmm. Atreus understands that he has to go and do this so that he can help Kratos. It's not as if we take their sort of agency or identity away as characters, which I like. But I can definitely see, like, from a mechanical standpoint, it's also them just sort of being self-aware in some cases of like, yeah, we have no choice but to put another puzzle here, so we'll just sort of make that apparent in the dialogue.
Yeah, but I don't know, there was a criticism brought up in the, there's a video called The Last of Us Review by Matthew Matosas. It is the most critical review I've seen of the game. He ultimately comes out in favor of the game, but he does point out a similar thing that I'm pointing out here. And he says, wouldn't it make more sense in reality that Joel would get frustrated with this same puzzle solution over and over and just be like, this is ridiculous, we can both swim across, if I just take some time and teach you how to swim? You know, this is a several months long journey. At no point did Joel think, I could just teach this girl how to swim and then we don't have a problem.
Right.
So it's stuff like that. So even narratively, I'm thinking, well, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that they would keep doing that. And mechanically, it's boring as shit.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of goes to another problem of just there's so much silence, or not really silence, but just kind of, there's too many calm spots, you know? There's too many spots in the game that are just walk here and people just kind of talk your ear off and you just walk and they talk and I just don't care, you know? There's a lot of that as well. And did you want to say something, Ding?
Yeah, I was going to say, I really think that as far as just like a universal narrative experience with Sony, I think they sort of took some of the things that a lot of people complained about in Last of Us and fixed it when it was applicable in like God of War. I'll say we'll use the example again, because as far as using Atreus as your actual companion, it is exactly the argument that you were talking about. It's like by the end of the game, Atreus is almost just as important as Kratos when it comes to combat.
Yes, and that is a big distinction here, because right. Ellie can shoot, but she's not very accurate, and she doesn't help very much, except for one set piece where she's super accurate, mm-hmm. but she's not essential to the gameplay. They can take her away, and I don't feel any different as a player, whereas if you take Atreus away, he has actual impact on the mechanics of the game.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he has, and he even has his own skill tree that you mm-hmm. upgrade over time. So it's like, narratively, Atreus is learning more how to survive on his own. But then from a mechanical standpoint, you are also allowing Atreus to have more agency when it comes to how you produce those inputs in combat. Like, because he has, you know, different bow abilities, and he even has, like, I'll use the term ultimate abilities, I guess, just to, for lack of a better term. You know, it's a lot more of an organic experience, and I think I would venture to say that they learned a lot from Last of Us when producing games in the future like God of War.
Possibly. I mean, it was made by a different studio, but I'm pretty sure Sony was the publisher on them, or mm-hmm. at least somehow involved in some decision making. So that is possible.
Because it's like...
I would hope so. I mean, if they change that in The Last of Us 2, which seems to be starring Ellie first, and then I think another girl as her, you know, second.
Yeah.
If they more closely interact like that, that would be really cool.
Right. But I mean, it's like... just my last bit with it is that, like, you know, when you're going to make a Sony exclusive, what, no matter what publisher you're from, like if you're, you know, if you're across the world, like, doesn't matter. I think the point is that when you go and make, when you're making another, I guess, IP underneath the same, say, Sony belt, you are, it would be sort of foolish to not take. To not take notes of the experiences that have come beneath you, like, mm-hmm. like the difference between Until Dawn and Detroit, for example, you know, instead of 8 characters that you don't really care about until the very end, you know, Detroit brings it down to 3 in a lot more psychologically driven elements. And then mm-hmm. you have like Last of Us to God of War again, you know, it's that when you're making God of War, and something like Last of Us is already out with those same mechanical, like, nuances that we've talked about, it, like, you have to take notes from them. And you have to say, like, mm-hmm. well, if this is going to be the next blockbuster, right? Or if this is going to be the next AAA for Sony's big belt, how are we going to improve upon experiences that the players have already had? And that's mm-hmm. just as important.
Yeah, there's a necessary need to understand sort of the dialogue of games as they're being created. You mm-hmm. know, I heard this game, I let's say Naughty Dog was okay, I heard what Uncharted said, that was within us, you know, we made Uncharted, we made Last of Us, we heard what happened there, we're gonna do this here. And then right. you know, God of War's developers, we saw what they did, we're going to do this instead. You know, there's kind of a dialogue that has to happen there, hearing previous instances and speaking your own.
Right.
But to my final major point is to kind of ask sort of rhetorically, what kind of game is this? Like, what genre of game is this? So, like, because I have 3 answers. One of them is, I think, correct, maybe. Mm-hmm. The first thing I would think is, well, it's zombies, it's got resource management. Is it survival horror? Well, not particularly. It has limited resources. But the major thing in contrast with that is I have a very easy way to deal with situations that don't expend resources.
Mm-hmm.
So I can just punch dudes. I've been in several situations. If you're in an area with runners, which are your standard zombie who can see you, they're not very strong, and you could just fist fight a crowd of them. It doesn't matter. And
yeah,
it's goofy as shit. So it's like, I don't think you should be able to do that much damage with just punching zombies. I just think that, like, wouldn't one of them bite you? I don't know.
Yeah, and punching,
I think that's goofy.
Yeah, just my quick bit. And I'll let you finish, I'm sorry. But, like, I just think that punching zombies is, like, it's so uncharacteristic of zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, the instant I found out I could do that, I was like, what the fuck? Okay, so I have a way to deal with things that doesn't expend resources. So I actually have a ton of resources. And it's not particularly scary. I don't know, that might be subjective, but I wasn't on edge at any point, really. There was only one part where I was on edge. And that was just because I didn't know where to go, and there was clearly too many zombies to shoot down. So it was more of a confusion thing than anything. But so the final thing that really breaks it as a survival horror game is the stealth. Because it's really, really easy. And if you're currently undetected, you're going to do stealth because it reserves the most resources. And it takes them out the quickest, puts you at the least risk, and generally, it's pretty easy to do. So you can walk up, and one thing I noticed is you can walk up and you can shiv, which uses the resource of a shiv, but you can also just choke people out. And the thing about choking out is it warns you in the game and says, hey, choking them out is a little louder and people might hear you. I haven't noticed that happen. I've choked out people like 3 feet from other people and they just don't notice. So I guess they took that out without taking out that bit of dialogue. I don't know. But basically, you just run around choking out people unless it's, you know, a clicker. Because if it's a clicker, you can't, but you can shiv a clicker. There aren't so many clickers that you can't just shiv them all. And, you know, bloaters, which you just totally avoid. So if it's a stealth game, it's not a very good stealth game. All you can do is move from point A to point B, hope you don't get seen, choke dudes out, maybe do a shiv. You can throw beer bottles and it'll distract people. That's all you've got as far as a stealth game. So it's not really a stealth game either. And so I guess it's an action game, but it adds these little elements like kind of intentional like weapon sway and things that would imply that it's actually a survival horror game. It just feels to me very confused mechanically. And I don't get this image in my head of a single artistic view of what a player will do. It's kind of one of those, well, we'll give the player all of the options. You can stealth, or you can set a trap, or you can just shoot them all down. And in doing that, it kind of just made it a distracted design, in my opinion. And I don't know, I don't think it served the game. It was one of those situations where I would play the game for however long. It would be intercut with, you know, random firefights or sneaky parts or whatever, fighting dudes and walking around, maybe doing a puzzle that's super easy to figure out, takes no brain power. It's, you know, swaths of that, and then a little cutscene, and then another swath of uninteresting gameplay. So kind of going back to my original point, my original statement, if this was a 2-hour movie, I would have thought it was well executed. It paid off. And if it was shorter, I would have been happy. But all of the bits in the middle that are gameplay and walking around and just listening to shit I don't care about, I don't know. I don't think that was particularly well executed. I feel like they just said, well, we're going to have a game where you fight people and shoot people because that's the easiest kind of conflict you could have, you know? I feel like if they devoted entirely to any one of those genres that I mentioned, it would have been a better game. If they devoted totally to survival horror, or they devoted totally to stealth, or they devoted totally to action, I think it would have been a better game as a result. What happens instead is just kind of this distracted game design that clearly feels like they thought of a story, then put a game on the back. You know, I feel like they're aware of that to some extent. I feel like they're aware of that. And honestly, going into this, I felt like, you know, before I played the game again, I thought, there's no way I'm going to like this game. There's hell no way that I'm going to play The Last of Us 2 or care about it at all. But now I'm interested to see if they fix these things, because they seem to be aware of what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, fingers crossed that The Last of Us 2 is more interesting.
I think that they might really keep their ears open, as they probably have been for a long time. And I think that their plan is to sort of do what we've discussed, what we've sort of clarified, like, you know, learning from their previous title, but also learning from previous subgenres that are under the same sort of, I guess I'll just say Sony belt again. My last thought was piggybacking what you were saying. You know, there's a lot, you know, you can either use resources or not. You can use stealth or not. You can go guns blazing or not. I think my definition is just that, like, perhaps in this case, all of the options devalues what's considered like the best option in a linear experience. You know, when you have so many different choices that lead to one outcome, it's just sort of like, well, it's up to you. It doesn't matter. And whether or not that gives you agency as a player or not is up to the player. I mean, if it was not linear, for example, no, it's a no-brainer. You know, all of the options work. You know, Breath of the Wild, it's not necessarily, it's really non-linear. So any option that you do to even solve, like, the shrines, right, which are linear, you know, it's all meaningful and gratifying.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, maybe condense it to one or two options. You know, do you want to go the guns blazing route? Do you want to go the stealth route? While keeping the survival crafting a major part of all of that, so you have to manage resources one way or the other.
Yes, because what happens in this game, for me, it's kind of obvious what to do. Like, you can do anything, but the clear best approach is to first try stealth, because you're probably not going to get hurt doing stealth. And you're not going to expend anything doing stealth. If someone sees you, then you start shooting them. And you really, what I did was I just shot the guys. Like, if it was a bunch of zombies, I would shoot the clickers and then punch everyone else. So it's kind of obvious. Like, the most optimal, quote unquote, the most optimal way to play the game is not an engaging way.
Yeah.
I think they need to rethink their approach of what is the most optimal thing. If stealth is the most optimal, you have to have some sort of trade-off. You know, you have to think, well, what's the advantage of going in guns blazing versus stealth? Well, the real answer is the stealth is boring and I'm not patient enough. You know, that was kind of the conclusion I came to right at the end. I was thinking, oh, well, the stealth is really boring because there's not really a whole lot to work with. So I just said, screw it, I'm just going to shoot all these guys. Like, the only reason I went for action was because the alternative was boring.
Yeah.
But that's the most optimal way to play the game. And I don't know, I think they just need to rethink that balance of your options more than anything.
It reminds me of the silliness of Dead Rising, you know what I mean? Where it's like,
yeah.
The only option you have is to pick up a park bench and just start swinging.
Yeah, but, like, that's fun.
Well, yeah, yeah.
It's fun to do that. So it's not only the most optimal, but it's also the most fun. So it's like, okay, I'm going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I had one more point. Just give me a second.
Oh, man. After talking about this, I'm actually personally excited for Last of Us 2, because I want to see how they pick up where Sony just leaves off with all of their titles. You know, because we were talking about every game just sort of picks up from the previous one. So I'm interested in Last of Us 2 a little bit more so now. And after, you know, if you left and came back, you know, hopefully you're excited as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing I wanted to say. I was thinking how when I started out, like I said, this came from a place of hate at first. But once I started to gain some level of appreciation for the game, it came from a place of love. I'm actually more excited for Last of Us 2 than probably anyone I know, because it had like a fucking brouhaha about how Ellie's gay or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give a shit. I just didn't give a shit about the game because I didn't give a shit about the first one. Now yeah. I give more of a shit about the second one than pretty much anyone. but the ultimate point of this, like I said, it comes from a place of love. Very much. This is why you criticize things, because you want them to improve. I want a really good Last of Us 2. That would be great. And the only way we're going to do that is by criticizing these games, even when they're clearly got a lot of talent and money put into them.
Mm-hmm.
Last of Us was clearly, clearly well thought out. I just thought maybe it was misguided in a few ways. The only way we improve the medium as a whole community is to point out the things that it fell short with, and to point out these criticisms and say, this was great, but.
Yeah.
That but is very, very important to get the best games to be made. And so I think if, you know, people keep doing that, we will have an ultimately better medium, not just praising it because it, you know, it looks nice. It's like, yeah, it looks nice, but the game part, right?
Right.
So yeah. This criticism is important to me, and that's the stance I'm at right now. I have a deep love and appreciation for what they did, and I hope it's better.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us on this beautiful episode. Please come back next week whenever we have more shit to talk about. Dominic, please plug our pluggables.
Indeed. So if you'd want to, if you want to hear more updates about our releases and anything else that we really need to bring to the social media table, you can follow us on social, you can follow us on Twitter, which is tombstone_pod, or you can follow us on Instagram, which is tombstone_podcast. If you want to see where we are mainly distributed, as well as giving us some monetary support, we never expect it, but we absolutely appreciate the love. You can go to anchor.fm/tombstone-podcast. And if you want to support us monetarily, it's just that same URL with /support. You can see us on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Breaker, Overcast, you know, the list goes on. But we've gotten some pretty swell reviews on Apple Podcasts, and we really appreciate you guys. If you guys want to continue to give us love and support on that front, see us on Tombstone Podcast on Apple Podcasts and give us a good review and a rating. And that should be about it.
Yep. All right. Thank you, everyone, and farewell.
Goodbye.
Safe travels. All right.